Muhammad is my homie.
Yeah.
So is Chris. Mm-hmm. To never feel lonely, the pot I won't miss.
Ooh.
Phil has the answer. Paul has the grit. Pete will censor, but I f***ing love this shit.
Yeah, baby, that's it. That's right. I'm next to True Grit right here. It's Paul Burmeister. I like that movie, actually. True Grit's a good movie. Classic. Have you ever
seen
that one?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you need to see that.
I know.
You'll like that. That's all right. We'll let you off the hook there. At least you do watch movies, unlike the other guy that hosts this show.
Ahmed Breed.
He knows nothing.
For real.
I can't make any references with him at all. I can't say anything about movies.
That surprises me.
I know. You would think he would know.
Yeah.
I don't know what he does in his free time. I don't know. He's got no hobbies that he speaks of or anything.
He's got kids in a busy job.
He's got kids. I guess that's a lame excuse for not a... Other thing we know about Ahmed.
Yeah.
I'd like to get your thoughts about this.
Yes.
Right? Is Ahmed is a one-time-a-day brusher of his teeth.
That's it?
That's it, right?
No.
No, that's it.
No,
that's it. He only brushes his teeth in the morning.
He appears like a kind of guy who would value hygiene, like
right.
when I've been around him.
I know. I think he does.
One time a day.
You said
morning?
Morning, right.
I'm often three times.
You're a three-time-a-dayer?
Can
right.
be. Always
right.
two.
Right.
Sometimes three.
Sometimes three. Okay, yeah. All right. Yeah, that's a little too much, in my opinion.
No? If you go in the soft, right. circular motion, it's
oh,
okay.
Oh, you're not getting enamel away? Is that what you're telling me? Look at this guy. He's True Grit, and he's a dentist.
There you go.
Yes.
Meanwhile, I miss all the fun shit on Monday. You guys, like, make up poems and about
that,
everybody.
That was from a listener. A listener made up that poem there. Right.
Really?
That was our friend Tomas from Brazil.
Okay.
Who made up a little poem.
Sent it in.
Right.
Oh, man.
I know.
Yeah.
Right. And he doesn't want this shit censored. He loves this fucking shit. All right. So that's what he wants to hear.
We need more poems so we can have it on Wednesday in addition to Monday.
Okay.
Because that was good.
Yeah. We can ask that.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody out there, send some poems in so
please.
Paul can feel included in the poem segments.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. I've got your back, man.
We need Wednesday poems. Poems. We need more oral hygiene from the Monday host.
Yeah, we do. 100%.
That's surprising.
More. I know. Surprising, right? Guys so buttoned up like that.
I
know.
Yeah.
Look into it. Check it out. We put it out on Twitter, and most people said it was not acceptable.
Completely.
Yeah, not acceptable.
Yeah.
And all that day of eating that crap, and he didn't brush his teeth to go to bed.
Lays down at night without
his
toothbrush.
Just sits there. His poor wife. She's never kissed him past 10 o'clock ever at night, ever.
My mind did go there. I wasn't gonna verbalize it, so
that's why I'm here. That's why I'm here. What's up, everybody? This is Chris Sims Unbuttoned, presented by Under Armour. It's the What the Fuck Happened Wednesday podcast. We got some good stuff. We're going to talk about... The Lions overwhelming the Cards and Kyler Murray.
You.
Some interesting things there. The Brady shutout in New Orleans. Again, they continue to have the scheme, the players, the knowledge of the Bucs offense that really kind of stymies them. We'll hit on the Colts and the Pats, and then we'll get to the play of the fucking day, which is going to be a Devontae Adams-themed play of the day. And we'll talk about some other football, too. So there's a show, that's a show, and now let's get to the show.
Look at you in a light and easy way, just kind of outlining what's coming up. I mean, it's not only that it's you're reading things like a true host.
Thanks, man.
You're just with ease running through. Here's what we're going to do today. Here are the topics.
I don't even know. Sometimes I think I'm supposed to probably kick
anymore.
That part off to you.
No,
continue to talk, and then I'm stuck once
I'm
I go.
I'm just over here like paying attention, like trying to figure out when to fill in the blanks and keep it going.
Yep, all right.
When to keep it on a certain spot. But you mentioned Tom Brady and the Buccaneers.
Yep.
And I think anytime that group led by that quarterback doesn't score a single point, and the topic is what the fuck happened, that's where it has to start.
No doubt.
We've got this bundled together pretty well. Let's start with the macro, if I can use that word,
sure,
Chris. The big picture on, and I think you alluded to it a little bit, and that is the Saints defense having the number of Tom Brady and knowing how to defend him with the scheme and the execution. When you compare what Brady and the Buccaneers have done against that defense with what they've done to the others, and there's the numbers right there. Last two seasons with the Tampa Bay against everybody else, Brady's 24-5. Really damn good.
Dominating, right.
Against the Saints, 1-4. His touchdown to interception ratio, 1-1. He doesn't do that against anybody else.
I know. It's crazy.
They struggle to win.
Right.
They struggle to score points.
Right.
And individually, it's a lot tougher on Tom than the other teams. So before we watch what happened, what's your read on what Dennis Allen has for Tom Brady that the other ones don't?
Yeah, well, first off, you know, I think the thing is they got talent there on that side of the ball that helps them match up with you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The talent, of course, being, hey, we know it's a front forward that can get there and get after Brady
helps.
Without blitzing.
Yeah.
You know, they're also creative and, you know, our old thing we talk about a lot, the blitz change. Hey, two guys come in, two guys come out. It's a four-man rush, but somebody got free still, even though it was only a four-man rush. They're good at that. They got a guy in Lattimore who can guard Evans one-on-one, so that allows you to do some other things, you know, so they can trust that. A guy in Malcolm Jenkins who I think it's safe to say defends Gronk as good as anybody I've seen defend Gronk in man-to-man situations. You know, let alone they have an awareness of him all the time. They realize in big situations they want to go to Gronk. You know, they do a good job of, hey, yeah, Malcolm Jenkins got a man-to-man, but the DN jams him before he goes and rushes the passer so he doesn't get off clean. That gives Malcolm a little bit of an extra advantage. So there's that, you know. Having safeties be attentive towards Gronk a little bit in, you know it pass situations, taking away crossers. That's something we're going to see here.
Yeah.
You know, we hear about Tampa. People want to play two deep, take away the big plays down the field. The first time around, I would tell you the Saints did play a lot of two deep. This time around, you know, them being a step ahead of the game, knowing they're probably going to expect a lot of two deep, different two deep coverages. They played a lot less two deep in this game. In fact, it was a lot of single safety. It was a lot of one safety in the middle of the field, but disguising it the proper way. So taking away crossers where the Bucs are really good at, let me look at a go route down the sideline, and then there's two guys crossing in the middle, like the touchdown we saw to Perriman beat the Bills last week.
Yeah.
They love doing that stuff. So you don't have a plan to pass off crossers, have a body there. You're going to have issues against Tampa. So there's that. And the creativity with being sound along with it. I think that's the last thing that I'll say there before we get into it. I don't mean to cut you off.
No, that
to me is the other thing. Dennis Allen can be creative, but sometimes we see creative defenses and go, well, yeah, that's creative, but if they run the ball over here, they're going to get a 50-yard gain. Or if they throw a pass over here, they're in deep shit here on this defense. They're creative with along with being sound across the board too. They're not being creative in the fact of like, we're going to take this away, but we're just going to roll the dice and hope they don't go over here and we're screwed.
Fine line, yeah.
Right. And that to me, you got to have that with Brady because he'll find that hole if there's consistently a hole or a weakness within the scheme. So I think if that has summed it up, I know that was a lot there, but hopefully
no, it's
that's
all good.
It up.
I mean, it's a giant topic. If all the topics came out of the weekend,
right.
The Buccaneers, I still think that they're the number one scoring offense in the league, not scoring a single point, and
it's
then
crazy.
You have the history of
right.
it. It's the number one topic. So
right.
I've been thinking about the last couple of days. And tell me what you think of this interpretation of why the Saints have had success against Brady.
Yeah.
To me, it has to be more about whatever their combination of personnel is, because
I think so.
Scheme can get copied. And
right.
Dennis Allen
right.
is he's done a terrific job.
Yeah.
Easy to admire that. But you know that as soon as they had success one time, flares go off all over the NFL.
Sure.
Hey, let's watch what they did.
Right.
We'll copy it.
Right.
So you know teams have tried to copy it, but there must be something about the personnel they have, front, middle, and back, that is different, that
I
is
think so.
Better against the Buccaneers than just the scheme, because everybody can kind of copy the scheme.
No doubt about it. You know, again, good coaches can make that scheme a little bit better than some, right? So, but you're right about that. You know, I think the Lattimore thing is a real thing. The fact that they kind of just like, wait, we don't have to worry about Mike Evans. They're always putting a safety over the top, and we can just let him be over there. You know, Malcolm along with Gronk, I think, gives them that advantage too. The big thing, though, to your point, I do think is that defensive line.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that they have not only talented guys there, you know, they have a legitimate seven or eight deep that they can play, so they can keep throwing the fresh bodies at you. They've played together for a while, this defense now. You got a guy like DeMario Davis in the middle who, you know, that allows them, because of their continuity and the fact that they've been together, and now you got a guy like DeMario Davis who, you know, like a Ray Lewis is a quarterback for the defense, it allows them to call different defenses within the same defense. Oh, you know, hey, we're check, we're playing one rat. Oh, wait, they motioned over here, and now he's checking. Hey, we're not in one rat anymore. It's quarter, half, and hey, if he comes this way, you and me are going to switch it off and pass. Like, they do all that stuff too. So I guess it is, I would say the personnel is the first thing. There's no doubt about it. That gives them the great advantage. And then the coaching, creativity, and what I would call some bastard looks that are confusing to any quarterback, let alone Tom Brady. It's not easy to confuse Brady.
Right.
But I think they give him a few looks that make him go, oh, wait, I thought it was this coverage. And then it's, oh, it's not. Oh, wait, no, it's this coverage. Oh, no, I'm getting pressure. Oh, I got hit. Right. Like, and that little confusion helps you, him hold the ball a half second longer, you know, him not be as decisive. And then, of course, that pass rush we're talking about gets there and makes magic happen.
When you look at this game specifically and the fact that they got shut out, it's easy to point to the back half of the game.
Yeah.
If you want to stick up for the Bucs and say, well, they didn't have the majority of their weapons. But this kind of, I mean, if it wasn't domination, this kind of controlling the Saints defense versus the Bucs offense happened early in the game.
Yes.
Also, when they had everybody.
No doubt.
Let's pick it up with that thought there when we look at the plays here. First quarter, 4:35 left. Buccaneers down 3-0. This is a 3rd-and-5 on the Tampa Bay 38.
Well, you know, again, here's one of these looks. When you look at the defensive front, you're not sure, like, wait, it's 3-down linemen. It's 2 linebackers. Who's blitzing? Who's coming? I don't know. You know, there's Malcolm Jenkins to the weak side here. He could blitz. There's a safety over the top, right? So, you know, as you stand here, here's the first part of the confusion. You know, it's 5 guys right there, along with Malcolm Jenkins, a 6th, right, that you just go, I'm not sure. Any one of them can come. The way they've lined up, they can really unlock any of them. It doesn't really matter. I mean, he could come. It could be 2, because then he can jump out and cover. You know, if he comes, he could come down and help. This play, ultimately, all right, is going to be man-to-man coverage and the start of what I said, some tough looks and them understanding. It's another element I probably lost here. Their understanding of what the Bucs do in certain formations, down in distances, personnel sets. There was great understanding of that all night long. What do you want to ask?
I have one question here, because this is such a tough look for the right side of the line, the back. So to take it back to the snap, at this point, when there are 3 players and a potential 4th off of Wirfs, let's get into the mindset of the center, the right tackle, and the back in terms of, oh shit, what might happen here? What's our pre-snap plan to deal with it if all 3 of those players come?
Yeah, right. Well, they got to know, like, first off, I in this play, I'm pretty sure I'm correct here. Brady called the protection to go this way.
Okay.
So within this, and if they want to get the back out, the perfect thing is going to be, hey, you kick out here, you kick out here, and now he has one of the secondary people that blitz if they do come. That would be what you really want. You know, that's ultimately what you want. And then, of course, the center will be man-to-man over here. Now, listen, if they're in alignment here, too, where, you know, like we talked about, they could do that and he could bring him and, you know, they could also bring him where if they were really smart and had a feel for that coming, they could also make a call where now everybody, the center included, kick out, right? And that means that the 74 would have to take over and block him there. Those are the things that Tom Brady is trying to figure out here with this alignment. And this alignment, I think he knows for sure, at least if there does pressure come, it's going to come from this half of the field with the way it's lined up, right? So he gets the protection correct. But you're still not sure, and you're still making sure, wait, am I protected as you're dropping back? They're going to run a simple route combination where they go corner route, okay, Godwin's in the slot. He's going to fake like he's going to run the shallow cross and kind of work back out, and there's going to be a clear go route on the outside. Mike Evans is going to run inside and run an in cut. Now, the thing that the Saints have done so well throughout this whole game and all the times they play Brady, here we go. We got a 2-deep look. It looks like it's going to be 2-deep, all right? But this was the theme of the game. Line up in what you think is going to be a 2-deep play. Call a play that you think is going to be good versus 2-deep. Because if this is 2-deep and they're going to play it man underneath, like I told you, Godwin's out here with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. That means that Demario Davis is going to have to cover Gronk from inside leverage. So Brady's thinking, if it's 2-deep and he's inside, anything Gronk breaking out, he's going to be open. This is great. Okay, I kind of got what I want here. All right? So here we go. We come off. We see the 4 that came, right? It's Quan Alexander. There's Cam. I don't know who the nose tackle was here. And there's Davenport. All right? So you got a 4-man rush. It is Malcolm Jenkins on back. We got Adebo on Evans. We got Marcus Williams, who is really a single safety defense. Going to be a single safety, but he's going to stay over there. He never aggressively goes to the middle of the field. And you're going to see here, too, they got an awareness of Gronk. And P.J. Williams is going to help within that, and they pass this off. So watch how this plays off here. Again, this is a man-to-man single safety defense. He kind of scares you with presence over here. You're not sure. Is it cover 2? I don't know exactly what they're doing. All right. So there's that aspect. And now as he's dropping back, he's probably realizing, oh, wait, this looks like as we go here and play, like, it looks like this guy is going to be covering Gronk. He probably still didn't even care at that point, excuse me, as far as where Gronk was, because you see Gronk running the out route. He's still going to get leverage on this guy, but here's the beauty of it. They are never going to let the crossers beat them with the New Orleans Saints. And now this guy who was kind of dropping down free to be a work guy, all right, now the shallow crosser who stops, DeMario Davis is going to stop because he's going to pass this off. You know, again, they're not going to get picked and let people run shallow crosses to where the defender can't chase because he's got to fight over Gronk. This is what good defenses do to stop crossers. So he stops and puts the brakes on for that crosser, and now Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, who's responsible to carry him, he's going to drop back and kind of get in the hole there and take away Gronk. You know, again, now this is some knowledge of they must know what's coming to a degree and having a good feel for that, right? But you could see as Brady drops back, like, this is the picture he's seeing right before he starts to get pressure. And he's going, oh, I might have Gronk. But now he's seeing this and he's going, uh-oh, I don't. And by the time he starts to get to the second guy and go, oh, wait, where am I going to go? Here's the other theme of the game. That this dude right here starts kicking ass, beats Capo one-on-one at the guard position, and they get the sack.
That was just half a split second of, okay, nobody's open, now I got no chance.
No, I got no chance.
Zero chance with that rush.
And again, I totally think this is a single safety, really like robber-type defense.
Mm-hmm.
But on this one, there's some special call because Gronk here in the slot, where he's playing this way. I don't think it's a true bracket coverage. I don't. I think it's just awareness of Gronk, okay? And then within that, they don't ever just let their guys run and chase after the crossers. He drops back because he's going to switch positions with this guy, and they end up just having the body in the way. Hey, they were willing to give him this completion right there.
I was going to say, if you really want to nitpick this,
right,
Brady didn't have much of a chance.
He didn't have much of a chance. I think by the time he kind of figured it all out,
that was the one place he could have gone.
He could have gone right there to Godwin as we let it play and you show and you go, yeah, he could have. But just as he's probably getting there, he's got a big right hand of Cam Jordan coming down. But that was the start of the theme of the night. Again, that's a bastard, weird single safety look. You know, with a specific rule probably to that formation and because of Gronk, that I can't sit here and tell you I know exactly what it was.
Yeah.
All I can tell you is it's well thought out, and it took away one of their biggest weapons and the guy he always wants to go to on third down, and it caused a problem, obviously.
We hear so many times about how some coordinators have the luxury of getting pressure with four.
Right.
And you see the specific luxury there with that one play, but we'll see it again here the next couple, where when you bring only four, you can leave a safety in the middle of the field. You can bring a safety down to cover the middle. So you kind of have two other huge areas covered with that luxury of rushing four.
Definitely.
So it's some detail there.
It's a huge detail, though.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, it's just, it's another, you know, chess piece to play with.
Yes.
And the coverage there to really screw people over. And again, I don't know. I could be wrong, and this could be totally man-to-man with this guy right here. And now DeMario Davis and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson are just bracketing this guy. Like, hey, if he goes in, you got him. If he went out, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson would have taken him. You know, it could be that. It could be as simple as that. Either way, I'm not exactly sure. I'm just trying to coach people here and tell you, like, again, what they did. I'm not going to have all these answers unless I was in the meetings with Dennis Allen.
Right.
But it's creative and well thought out, and it happens too much for to think, like, oh, they just lucked into it, and that's that lucky call right there. No, it's constantly throughout the game where Brady's number one option or a great disguise really screws them over.
And I think even though you may not have specifics of the call, and of course we don't, as you mentioned, we're not in the meeting,
it
can make sense a little more when you group together different snapshots of what went well. So that's one play.
Right.
Let's get to the next play. This is second quarter late, I think inside of a minute left until half. Tampa Bay now down 6-0, and again facing a third down and medium. This is third and four.
Third and four, you know, same things apply here. Like a tough look from the safety.
Looks
like too deep, right? I mean, the ball's about to be snapped. Again, who's coming out of the five guys that are the line of scrimmage? I don't know which one is coming, you know, and that's part of they like to be able to block the five guys with their five linemen. And then you don't have to worry about the back can always get out. That's five guys out in the pass route, you know. So that's what they're trying to figure out, you know. And then you're thinking, well, for sure they'll bring Cam Jordan. Well, Cam Jordan's going to drop, and they're going to end up bringing DeMario Davis and stunt this guy and him, and you're going to have a four-man rush, but again, a different way to do it. And here's the other thing. Again, the two-deep look that's given them issues, gave them issues the first time they played. They're not going to just play too deep. P.J. Williams is going to come down in here and be a rat or a hole player. Again, the Bucks love crossers, so they weren't going to let them go, oh, look out here to a single cut, and then have crossers just running across the field for you. They were always going to have somebody there for that, and that's a big part of playing the Bucks. So within that, you're going to get a guy in the middle, but also, again, what I mean by the bastard looks, and here's the first one that really shows, is like, all right, it's a single safety defense. This guy should go in, he should rotate, and Williams should rotate to the deep middle, right? That's what we see, like, from rat or you know, some sort of robber coverage, right? Yeah, that's what you usually see. But instead, Williams stays out here, kind of making it look like it's still a cover two look. So you're looking at the safeties going, well, it looks like cover two. It looks like cover two. Look at, I mean, Brady before the snap, I feel like the one of the last things he looked at was out here at this safety. So now he sends the motion. Okay. You're going to see him go back. Now, again, this is what's crazy about this. You know, it's hard to tell. You tell me. Brady here, looking to the left. You know, every good quarterback, you get the ball, you look to see where the safeties are. He's looking at the picture because he's got three receivers over here. You see the safety doing this out here? You're going, oh, this is some sort of two coverage over there.
He's got that half.
But he really doesn't in this coverage. So he's scaring Brady away from this side of the field because he's like, wait, I think that's some sort of two, right? But he's really just going to be here for a body presence, and they must have a good feel or feel confident that, hey, whatever this guy does over here, we're good with this matchup if he does run a go route or anything of that nature, all right? They must feel good with that. They don't care. It's Malcolm Jenkins on Brate, so they weren't necessarily worried about, oh, no, he might run a go route at us and beat us, right? So they said, hey, Marcus Williams, stay over here. Make Brady think it might be cover two. He's not going to be sure what it is. Give him a crazy bastard look to make him, again, hold the ball, just be a hair indecisive for a second. And as he looks at that, you know, again, he's looking, figuring it out. But now he's also at the point where he's getting a little jumpy with all the pressure he's getting under. And he looks, he probably sees too deep, knows the middle of the field should be open. So he wants to get back, I think, to this in-cut.
Yes, yeah.
Right? You can kind of see it, all right? And I'm going to try to get it. So right here, see now. But now he's like, oh, no. Wait, the safety is coming into the middle of the field. I'm going to replay it one more time. So he kind of looks left. He's going, wait, I don't know. It looks like some toward it too deep. The middle of the field's wide open. I should be able to hit my in-cut. But I think you can kind of see, like, I'm going to do it one more time just so everybody, you can see right here, he's looking down the middle of the field, and it's like, oh, no, wait. There's somebody in the middle of the field. I'm not going to be able to do that, let alone there's the pass rush again. Now, yeah, at this point, he's got this guy. But this is the thing where I argue, you know, with Brady sometimes and go, hey, yeah. Makes no plays off schedule. Zero.
Take that back to after Brady had the ball there.
Yeah.
Take it back. The safety that drops down, who is that safety?
That's P.J. Williams.
Okay, so right. He really wrecks the play. You mentioned that they love crossers.
Right.
They love them so much that they have two here. They have the back at about 8 or 10 yards.
Right.
They have the tight end at about 15 to 18.
Right.
And he takes away both.
Takes away
one
both.
One player took away both of them. Right there, he's got them both covered.
Exactly right. But one guy got them both covered, and you could see both guys here kind of favoring anything outside because they know there's
smart.
A weakness,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So they know they got no help there, so I'm going to get there and help my own self there because if I can get these guys to go inside, I got a friend in there who's going to make things interesting.
If he's not there, Brady could have gone to either one of those two.
I agreed. I think if he's not there, like right as, you know, you could see right here, he's just starting to look at it right now. If he's not there, he's not going to worry about this pressure. He's going to go, wait, I'm just going to throw this and get this out. But he knows he can't because, oh, man, I throw it to him. He gets hit. He gets knocked out. The ball flies in the air. This guy's not ready to come out of the break yet. And now he's starting to see this and this, and now he's going to panic, right? You know, and again, I don't want to lose fact of, like, look, this is a cover two safety would take that kind of drop. He's in the cover two spot, But as it goes, you could see he's really – he's playing a single safety coverage there, just kind of scaring Brady away from working the three-receiver side a little bit with just presence, not necessarily what – you know, not necessarily a defensive scheme that's going to stop some of these routes. Listen, again, you could see out here, it's basically one-on-one. You know, you got one-on-one coverage to throw the out route or anything. It's not a trail technique like you would get in two-man. You know, it's not that. It's true, just man-to-man, robber, rat, whatever you want to call it, type of coverage, making him just hold the ball a split second, and then they knew their pass rush was going to have to get there and do what it did. And I think they know, too, once they get to that point, you know, yes, this is not when Brady's dangerous. When Brady has to pat the ball a second time, that's when you know, uh-oh, we might got him, because he's not going to escape the pocket or make plays that way.
And I want to point out, too, if you've joined the pod throughout the last couple three seasons, you've heard Chris a number of times say that you hate it when they rush five. Well, they're rushing four, and when you don't bring that extra guy, you can do something a little bit different in the back end.
No doubt.
I don't know who the extra one was, but if you're bringing five or six, you might not be able to drop P.J. Williams down there to do the kind of things he did on that play.
No, exactly right. I mean, the blitz we might see a lot is, okay, we might see this right here, right? I'll go through it and we'll explain it. Like, yeah, okay, let's say they bring one, two, three, four, five and play this defense. Well, that means now he has to play him man-to-man, right? So now, yes, he's going to be down here, and he might get shook right away, and now he can get it off quick and get it to him.
And that would have left Brate behind him open as well.
Probably leaves Brate if he's got the time to throw it and get there. You're right. It's going to leave two people open. The fact that he drops to the middle, P.J. Williams, like you said, it covered two guys in the middle of the field and made Brady go, oh, no, I can't throw that in there. And that makes him hold the ball, and then the pressure got there.
One more play to highlight what the Saints defense did. Kind of has become the signature play if you're looking at the New Orleans defense, what they did against Brady. The interception in the fourth, he got frustrated after. So inside of 4 minutes left, 9-0, third down and 10 on the Buck 33.
Yeah, well, and like, again, I mean, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse. This is the way the game went. Again, look at the alignment up front. We got five guys. I don't know who's coming. Who's coming out of the five? I don't know. Okay, so that's the first thing. They're making Brady have to think about that. All right, and then the second thing is you look at the safeties and you go, it's too deep.
Looks like it again.
It's going to be too deep, right? You know, but this is again, at a point in the game now where you'd go, oh, man, they got to start realizing that like none of these plays they keep calling for too deep are too deep. They're always something to stop the crosser, stop something that way. And, you know, ultimately here what's going to happen, it's going to be a four-man rush. And they're going to leave Quan Alexander one-on-one with Vaughn, the second-year running back out of Virginia Tech, or not Virginia Tech, out of Vanderbilt, excuse me, right? And so they got that, and play this out. Now, again, there goes P.J. Williams, work in the middle of the field, you know? Again, look at our safety in the back half here, playing, again, a spot where most teams are going to put him right here. But they're going to put him here because, one, again, it's the tight end man-to-man over here. So they're not probably worried about, hey, we want you to play center field in case they run the go route with Gronk. They're going, okay, if they run the go route with Gronk, we'll just take our chances with Malcolm Jenkins. They're just doing that. You can't take away everything.
Right.
So they're taking a calculated risk of, let's play these three receivers again so you can be a body presence here and kind of give Brady another bastard look and what to expect. So he gets the ball. You see the four-man rush. Okay. Now, they must have some call, again, for the crossers coming here. And this one, as Gronk goes across, P.J. Williams is going to take over Malcolm's job and go this. Because they don't want Malcolm Jenkins to be coming across with another crossing route and then get picked off somewhere here, right? That's what happens. So these good defenses, they go, wait, this would be better for you because as this guy comes across, you don't really have to fight through it, and you can kind of come on a downhill angle and still be in Gronk's way as we go forward here. All right, so there goes P.J. Williams with Gronk. You could see that there. And now Malcolm Jenkins falls off, and now he's the rat or the robber player. So
what a veteran sense by him to veteran, just kind of fall
But this
off.
Is how they teach it this way, and this is where
it's
they're
high
good.
Level.
I know, it's high level.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, one guy is locked on the crosser, but they know in another guy that, hey, you got to pick it up, and now you got to take over his job. You see down here, again, there's Lattimore. He's on top of his receiver over here. So, again, that's not two-man or cover two. This is a single safety defense with just a single safety cheating to the three-receiver side, making you feel uncomfortable about that. And, okay, so now they pass it off, right? So, look, I mean, again, they know where Brady wants to go with the ball. It's a third down. Brady wants to go to Gronk. And as we go here, look, he looks at Gronk, but he sees that, okay, P.J. Williams has bit down on that pretty hard, right? He's looking at Gronk right here. He doesn't love that look. Now he's got the other crosser, of course, but what's going on? You know, their coverages married with their pass rushes all day long to where it confused them just long enough to now there's the pass rush. Now he's moving out of the pocket, and this is teams want this. They want Brady moving out of the pocket. This is when he's at his worst. And you see here, he gets there. He probably wants to throw the ball like right now, but Malcolm Jenkins is still here. And now we're going to take a few steps and be a little late with the throw because you want him to clear Malcolm Jenkins. You got a guy in your face. And Chauncey Gardner-Johnson undercuts it for the pick.
Man.
So, and it was a lot of that throughout the day. Single safety, having a plan for crossers, mm-hmm. like we're talking about.
Pressure
with
four.
Great disguises. Pressure with four.
Yeah.
Don't know what four, but it's going to be four. And all of those, even for a Brady, you're going to make them think twice, let alone they got some talented guys out there to do it too.
Two levels to spin it forward now with the final three games for the Bucs. They play the Panthers twice and the Jets once. Sounds like that's win Buccaneers. Do you see any of those or either of those two teams in the three games, yeah, giving the Bucs those kind of troubles,
right, yeah.
Scoring, moving the ball.
Like,
that.
I think the Panthers could pose some problems there. I do. The Panthers can play some pass defense. They can. You know, to me, what the Bucs are going to have to do against the Panthers, you're going to have to run the ball a little bit. You're going to have to. If you think you're just going to drop back against that pass rush, and those, they got some secondary players too.
So that brings up another issue for the Bucs. I mean, who's running it?
I know. It is.
Le'Veon Bell?
That's what we're going to get. Well, Ronald Jones, I think, will be the first guy that gets the ball. You know, again, I think he was in the doghouse because of fumbling the ball and kind of the way he acted got him in the doghouse. Of course, Fournette was playing really good.
Yeah.
But let's not forget, Ronald Jones – you know, at the end of the season last year was their guy, and then he kind of got banged up and Fournette took over in the playoffs.
Right.
So, yeah, it'll be him followed by Le'Veon Bell. I still am a believer, and listen, I know that they want Brady in the shotgun, and I'm sure Brady wants to be in the shotgun, and they want to throw for 75 touchdown passes. But to me, the Bucs are at the best when they still played the way they did last year. It's great that they're better
last
in the shotgun.
Last
right.
Yeah.
Right. Like, how many times did we break down them underneath the center? Two tight ends, two receivers,
mm-hmm.
smash mouth, run the ball. Oh, no, now it's play action, gash you down the field with a big throw.
Yeah.
Or they keep two or one of the tight ends in the block, so now he's max protected, and he's not all jittery and jumpy in the pocket like we just saw there.
Right.
You know, to me, that's when they're at their best, with a smattering of shotgun and doing some of that stuff there.
It's worked. I mean, it worked extremely well when it mattered most last year.
I think it's their best.
Scored the most points in the NFL so far this year. But now, I mean, just think about what they were 10 days ago in the first half against Buffalo. They were rolling. We're like, okay, these are the Buccaneers.
Yes.
We knew they were going to be there. Now they hit the gas, and they have this kind of gear. Well, now there's no Leonard Fournette.
Mm-hmm.
You can't run to him. You can't throw to him. Think about how often they threw to him. No Big. Godwin.
Right.
Maybe
Huge.
Evans.
Right.
I mean, it's the kind of turn that we have to do now as fans, and they have to do as players with what they had a short time ago, with what they have now. I mean, it's a true 180.
It is a true 180. It's enough. It's enough to
in terms
where,
of expectations for me. It is.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm going to join you in those expectations. You're right. I mean, I think we'd be crazy to just ignore it. Like, hey, maybe one of those injuries, I'd go, they're fine. No, they'll be fine. They're still too talented. They have enough injuries there, added to Lavonte David on the defensive side, who's going to be out for the year too.
Yeah.
You add that together, that's enough big names and major players at positions that are big for their scheme to where you go, that makes me think twice about them a little bit.
Yeah.
So we'll see how quickly they can get healthy and everything. You know, but, yeah, It does change the way you think about them, and it's one less weapon to worry about in their offense. And yeah, I'd be interested to see their plan of attack this weekend against Carolina. I really will.
So Tampa Bay, not the only highly seeded team right now, or appearing to be on their way to a high seed, that really struggled in the NFC. Cardinals, man, what is the deal? However you want to kind of specifically phrase the question of what's going on with Arizona. A couple of losses in a row. They go to Detroit, you know, plausibly the worst team in the league, and it wasn't even close. 30-12 loss. Before we get into that, let's take a listen to Dan Campbell and what he had to say after the game.
Hey, man. Welcome to Detroit. Man, I tell you what, we did everything we said we needed to do to that team. We did everything.
They did do everything. I ran all over them, made it look easy.
Right.
What's your read? I mean, couple of days later, actually 3 days later, on how they won that game.
Yeah, I mean, first off, this isn't one of those games where I go, well, the Cardinals were clearly better. They just messed it up, right? I mean, listen, we've had a lot of games like that where I go, okay, listen, calm down, everybody. Like, this team still better. They messed up. It's the NFL. You mess up three times, you're going to lose. This wasn't that. It wasn't. It goes back a little to what I thought it was on Monday. They beat them flat out. There's no like, oh, man, the Cardinals did this wrong. No, they were out hit. They were out coached. They were out executed. Whatever you want to say there, they did it all. Defense did some cool things that really gave Cardinals some issues. We're going to break that down. Offensively, you know, ran the ball, had some quick passes that got Goff the ball out of his hands because, hey, the Cardinals do a lot of crazy blitzes and things. They had that. You know, but then because of the running the ball, they had a few good play action passes, you know, involved in that too. And that was the game. But I think the biggest thing of the game was, you know, one, listen, I did not expect Jared Goff to go 21 of 26 and three touchdowns. Right. I did not think they would also, if they did that, be able to couple a 100-yard rusher with it. You know, that all of that. I mean, it was just – it was a good old-fashioned butt-whooping with just the timing of a, you know, like the oh shit play that put them up 10-0. Like, hey, we moved the ball. They're moving the ball. Run in, short pass, run, short pass. Now let's go for the kill play action pass. Boom, touchdown. You know, 37-yarder Amon-Ra St. Brown. But, I mean, man, they had a 93-yard drive for a touchdown, followed up by a 97-yard for a touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, there were some stupid penalties by the Cardinals, but that wasn't luck. They moved the ball on this football team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah.
You got a couple examples to show it. And one other thing to keep in mind, Cardinals came in 7-0 on the road before going to Detroit.
Right.
So just adding to the level of surprise there. There we see 7-0 before they go to the Lions and lose. Points a game, they were right at 33. They only put up 12. Just way off what they were used to doing when they left, what they're used to doing, we're used to seeing when they leave Arizona. So with that background, let's take a look at what Kyler Murray did or didn't do here. This is second quarter, 8.5 minutes left. It's already a 10-0 line.
Yeah, lead. You know, again, it goes into a little bit of game plan specific defensive calling by the Detroit Lions, and obviously having a good feel for what a team does or like how they want to attack you. And maybe also knowing, wait, what's their plan really? Do they really have a plan against some of these looks and the things they're going to do? You know, again, like this was the defense of the day here that gave the Cardinals issues. It was. The Cardinals, just to sum it up, really early in the game, they couldn't get yards unless they ran the ball or threw a screen. They couldn't do anything else. Anything in the drop back pass game, Detroit was all over it, whether they exposed protection or they knew where the ball was going to be thrown and they had people there. Here's a little bit of both. You know, here's both. Again, like what they really did this is Miami. They did the Dolphin stuff we've broken down. Like a lot of these looks right here, and it's man, 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 right? Man. Man, all right? It looks like it might be an all-out blitz, right? It's going to be something like that, all right? Mm-hmm. And as you see, I don't even think it's man. I don't really know what to tell you this coverage is,
okay? It's confusion.
It's game plan specific to, wait, we don't even give a shit about a safety in the middle of the field. We don't think, one, they're going to be able to figure out how to pick up, which is ultimately going to be a four-man rush here.
That's, started out as six, not only in alignment, but those other two who eventually dropped,
they came
right away.
They took a few steps, right? Right. So they did the thing we've broken this down a lot. Oops, sorry. I don't know why that button always does that. But, yeah, I mean, you see there. All right, they go. There's the two. And now you got two dropping out, right? You got a drop out. You got a drop out. All right, we got two. Four-man rush. They obviously, this is a theme of the day, have a good feel for what they were going to do offensively whenever they lined up in this. And they knew, okay, they're going to slide the whole line this way. All right, well, that's great, but that guy's going to be free then. Nobody's going to block him. And that's what happens here. So now you have this and a defense where they called, where they basically said, no safety in the middle of the field, and we're going to just have a bunch of people in the middle of the field because you're the Cardinals, and like the Bucks, right, and maybe more than even the Bucks, they love to throw to crossers over the middle too. And this is something you'll see throughout the day. Again, look at, I mean, this play is called to stop exactly what's being called here. Look, it's a crosser, and a half crosser who's going to button hook over the middle. And you could see here it's one, it's two, it's three, it's four, it's five. They got five guys in this general area, and you're going to see more plays as we go forward here for all these crossers that you're not going to feel comfortable about, right? So there we go. They got that. He's thinking like, wait, I get this type of blitz. I should be able to just hit one of these crossers real quick, and then it's a blitz. Well, not if nobody blocks somebody.
Yeah.
So he's totally free. There's nothing that quick, let alone they're in the areas if you're going to throw hot to where, like this picture right here, like where do you want them to throw it? This guy's going upfield, not looking. These two aren't looking, and there's guys here. You can't throw it anywhere. Almost disregard this guy, like as you'll see.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter because the confusion with the protection and how to stop it, and then they took away the quick throws off of that. And that ends up being a sack.
There's a lot of stuff. You could spend 20 minutes trying to figure out what's going in the back end, but didn't matter because the deception up front won before any of that came into play.
It's like blitz change cover zero.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to really call it. It's not really a blitz. It's like a cover zero zone here. I mean, that's really what it is. They're all playing eyes in the backfield. Look for crossers. They're going to throw something just past the first down line here. So let's make sure we're there. They had to have had a beat on this is what they do. They're going to try to just throw it just past the first down marker to get it. And they had people there. And obviously the protection was an issue too. And this was consistent. Really all the way, especially through the first three quarters of the football game.
We'll have one more play to look at, but just one thought when I watch Arizona here and I was thinking about them driving in here. You look around their division with the Rams offensively, the Niners offensively, you can picture them recently clicking along awfully well on offense.
Yeah.
When was the last time you had two games in a row? And I know Kyler's been injured, but when was the last time you had a couple, three games in a row where the Cardinals offense was like, yeah, that's what we've come to know?
You're right.
It's been a while.
It's been probably
over a
before
month.
His injury. Sure, it has. It's definitely.
It's just troubling this time
before,
of year.
No doubt. We saw this a little last year. You know, they kind of fell off at the end of the year.
Yeah.
You know, because teams have got a pretty good beat on their passing game. Now, where they're a little dangerous is like what we talked about all year. They do have a running game and a really good screen game that keeps you off their passing game to a degree.
Yeah.
But I do think, and specifically in this game, it really shows that, yeah, there's too many repeat calls. And there was obviously a feel of, we know what's coming here in this situation. Or if we play this defense and get this blitz, we know what you're going to look for, and we're going to have people there waiting for it.
Right.
There was a lot of that going on through this game.
Let's stay in the second quarter here. Later in the second quarter, still 10-0. And now, I think, is this third and goal?
Yeah.
Where we go? Yeah, second down. Pardon me. Second quarter, I was looking at the Brady stuff. It's 10-0, and it's third and goal on the line three.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, this is a big part of the game right here. It's 10-0, third and goal. They're going to end up with 0 points on this drive. And then the Lions are going to go 97 yards for a touchdown and make the game 17-0. And this is a huge turning point of the game. Now, again, here it is a similar look, Paul. I mean, you see it. Here, it's three receivers here. There's one here in the back. Chase Edmonds set off here.
Six defenders on the line.
Six
just
defenders
like last
on
play.
The line. And then all these guys in the back end just sitting here. This is all everybody within – nobody's deeper than 1 yard in the end zone. 1 yard, nobody's deeper than that. I mean, I don't know. If they don't have a feel for what's coming, then I'm crazy. But look what it is again, Paul. Look at the middle of the field. Guess what's coming? crossers. Crosser, 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 crosser. And Detroit's playing a defense where they're like, we're not even going to fucking guard you. We're going to have five fucking people here and just we're going to wait for the crossers to come to us. Like, it doesn't matter. We don't need to run with you. We know where you're going to be. I mean, look, it's there. It's there. He's running that way. They're going to try to get this on the back line, right? But none of it's there. And, of course, like, it's a weird look. So Kyler Murray's like, wait, coach didn't teach me to read this against this look.
And they only got five out, and Detroit is dropping seven.
Right. Dropping seven.
I mean, do the math.
Here's your four-man rush. You know, so here you go. And, like, let's still frame it. All right. So here's Kyler at the top of his drop. I mean, okay, three guys, absolutely no fucking chance of getting the fucking football. None. Guy in the flat, no chance you could throw to him. This guy right here, I believe that's A.J. Green on this play. I mean, all right, right now he's not making a break. You can't throw it to him. Kyler makes the mistake here of the pocket's not bad. I wish he would step up in the pocket, but then he ends up running to the right, okay, and now it's trouble.
There's truly nobody open.
There's truly nobody open. There's nowhere to go here on this at all. And you can see, like, even here, A.J. Green, he makes a little shoulder shake and tries to break this way. It doesn't get the DB. He's there for it. But they're all over it. And, you know, what I do want to say is, like, yeah, it's the second quarter, and there's 2 minutes and 8 seconds left. And I've seen this right here, like, I'm going to say that's the fourth or fifth time in the first half where I've seen it, where it's three crossers in the middle of the field. That's great. They're all in the same area,
yeah,
and they're totally covered, and they're just eating up space. They're not doing anything. So that's the predictability, I think, a little bit of the play calling and what they're doing there. They're all over it. Now he's under pressure. He tries to throw a laser in there. They don't get it. Incomplete.
Other side of the ball.
A lot of that.
I mean, the Cardinals offense, a lot lesser than we have come to expect, although, you know, recently, maybe it's a different story. Defensively for Arizona, how do they give up 30 points?
The big thing to me is it's a little concerning with them. And we do have to remember this. The Lions' offensive line is good. Like, it's good. They got something they got building for the future here where I go, they got some ass kickers. They really do. And, you know, when they're healthy and all together, it's an impressive unit. The Cardinals lack real big people. They really, Phillips is the only guy you look at to go, ooh, okay, he's got real size to plug things up and do that. But, yeah, they were pushed around in the run game. They gave the Lions receivers way too much respect. Like, Paul, there's so many plays, and again, we try not to make this podcast an hour or 4 hours long because we're usually 2 hours long. And there's so many plays where Goff catches the ball, and he just looks out to the right and throws to a receiver who's got a DB 10, 12 yards off him. I wrote in my notes, so I don't understand, like, it was like they thought they were playing Randy Moss. Like, why are we just giving them 6 and 8 yard completions? So between those two things, running the ball, too much respect for the receivers, and then, as we've talked about, you run the ball, it opens up two or three play action passes that can really be game changers. They took advantage of those opportunities. Goff played pretty damn good.
You
got to give him his credit.
Yep.
You know, it's not always beautiful. It's not lasers or spirals, but the ball was on target. He did nothing dumb throughout the game. I think you look at that, and then the Cardinals had three roughing the passer quarterback penalties that you know, two happened in one of the 90-something yard drives.
Yeah.
I mean, you give a team 30 yards, and like, hey, that's how you all of a sudden you look up and go, damn, we're down 17-0.
Right.
And it happened quick. It was a long 3-0 drive for the Lions. It was 3 and out for the Cardinals. It was a long 90-something yard drive to make it 10-0. And there's the Cardinals. It's like, wait, the first quarter's over.
Yeah.
We had three plays. You know, it's hard now. Now you're not in a rhythm. Now you're feeling the pressure of, oh, we got to get it going and come back. It all kind of compounds itself to a degree. And, yeah, it was just a good plan. And like Dan Campbell said, welcome to Detroit.
And now you look at the schedule and back it up to when we were talking about the Buccaneers. Well, at least they have the Jets twice and the Panthers coming up to finish out the regular season. Different story with Arizona. It's either going to be a blessing or a curse.
Yeah.
They take on the Colts on Christmas Day. Great game. Then they play the Cowboys. I'm kind of looking at this as a positive because – questions are now out there about Arizona.
Definitely.
If they play well and win against Indy,
yes.
If they play well and beat the Cowboys, no one's going to remember all these flares going off about what about the Cardinals?
You're right.
Win against the Colts, win against the Cowboys. All of a sudden, it's October again for the Cards.
No doubt. Everyone's going to go, okay, wait. They've righted the ship. They beat some playoff teams here.
Watch out.
Well, we don't need to be concerned about them going to the playoffs.
Yeah.
They're big ifs, though. We'll see.
Huge, I know.
You know, that's just going to be
I'm
really.
I'm not saying I'd so much
no,
believe
I know.
It.
I got you.
But that opportunity is there
for them. They can answer the bell
them.
And shut up a lot of the critics, to your point. There's
big
no
time.
Doubt about that. It'd be hey, that's going to be. To me, that's one of the under-the-radar best games of the weekend. Christmas night,
awesome.
Colts versus Cardinals.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's going to be amazing.
Get
I can't
Get your presents
wait.
Opened early so you can be in front of the TV.
No doubt. I mean, again, the Colts are – I think the Colts are dangerous.
Big time.
Big time dangerous.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think we're getting to that eventually. But in between the Cards and the Colts, we have something – that I like to call my favorite part of the pod.
Oh, he loves this part. He loves watching Chris be Johnny Host Guy, all right? And you know it. We are supported by Under Armour. Just like us, Under Armour wants to give you an edge. They are focused on performing better and taking their game to the next level, just like Paul and I. Everything from running shoes that propel you forward to hoop shoes that give you insane grip. They even make hoodies that reflect energy. We're not just about the end results, winning or glory. Under Armour is about the hard work, the dedication, the cycle of training, competing, and recovering. We give you advantages, but not shortcuts. The only way is through.
Once again, well done. You're undefeated there.
Thanks,
Under Armour, man. Under Armour makes a lot of different things. They slap that UA on a lot of things. What if they made a toothbrush that Ahmed used twice a day?
Oh, I like that. Look at you. I mean, like the creative juices flowing.
They make a hoodie that reflects energy.
Right.
You telling me you can't make a toothbrush that is used twice a day?
I agree.
What the hell?
I think we should do that. We should ask them for Ahmed's sake, for all of our sake.
For his wife's sake. Actually, you know, Ahmed lives in the town next to me.
Right.
If you brought that out on a Wednesday and we had some fun with that prop, I could just drop it off on the way
home.
You
could drop it off there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And we need to know. I mean, this Under Armour toothbrush has to have like a – it keeps count of when you use it. So we know he's actually using it twice a day because that's what we need. That's what we need from Ahmed.
Again, a hoodie reflects energy. A toothbrush can reflect how many times a day it was used.
Yeah, right. I think so. They can come up with that technology.
Okay.
All right.
As promised, Colts 27-17 over the Patriots. Already, as we tape this on Wednesday, Chris, feels like it was about 3 weeks ago
really
we watched
does.
That game.
Yeah.
Let's begin with if you want to focus on the Colts' run offense, which is great, that's fine, or if you want to go with the concern here, the Patriots' rush defense. Teams have gone 225 or more in two of the last three games.
I know.
Colts barely over that in 226, but the point is made. You know, the door is open there. You want to talk about the Pats' D struggling or about how strong the Colts rushing game has become.
Well, yeah, I mean, I certainly wouldn't have thought the number we saw there, over 200 yards rushing against the Patriots.
Big
in this
chunk
game.
Came at the end, at the very end of the
no
game.
No doubt about it. You know, listen, they beat the Tennessee Titans, letting up all those big yards.
Yeah.
It was a little concerning, though. You went like, man, I haven't seen holes open up like that against New England all year long. A little surprised by that. This game, like, you know, concerning, but not the same kind of concerning. One of those where, hey, we watch Saturday night, the game, you go, oh, man, yeah, they did run the ball good on them and all that. And, you know, and you sit there and you think, and you can't remember really all the runs or any of the runs that were specific or big time except the long one.
Yeah.
And that's when I got to the film, I went, okay, it wasn't great, but it wasn't as bad as maybe the numbers looked. Mm. All right. That big run was certainly like, yeah, it was a game changer.
Yeah.
You know, it won the game. You know, and then before that, okay, he's going to have, you know, what is it? He's going to have, let me just see, 28 rushes for 103 yards.
Right.
I don't think New England would have been mad at that if you told them at the end of the day, hey, he went 28 for 103.
Right.
Bill would probably be like, okay, less than four yards a carry for Jonathan Taylor. That's fine.
That's pretty good.
Right. You know, also, hey, within the 200 yards rushing, you know, the second drive of the game, they let up a speed sweep that went for 37. So that skewed the numbers,
chunk
too.
Plays in the ground game,
it wasn't as concerning to me as the Titans game is what I'm getting to, I guess.
Yeah.
Where the Titans actually, I felt like, really ripped open some big holes. This one, again, Colts are very good up front. I'm not trying to take anything away from them. It just wasn't as dominant to me as that
That's
game.
Fair.
Right? That's
fair
all I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I would also say, what were Taylor's exact numbers again?
29 for 170.
Okay, so he was 28 for a little over 100 without the big run.
Right.
Even though Bill would have taken that, defense did fine.
Yeah.
Frank Reich probably would too, just that hey, if my back gets 28 carries, that means that they haven't taken it away.
No doubt.
That means Carson's going to be a little better.
Right.
That means my defense is going to be a little more rested. So it's kind of like little minor win for both sides.
No doubt about
without it. The big run.
No doubt about it. The big run was, of course, the icing on the cake and put the nail in the coffin. Listen, the biggest thing about this football game, hey, we could talk about Jonathan Taylor. We'll hit on Mac Jones and his stupid interceptions. They were stupid. There's no way to say that. You know, but more than anything, the one thing that changed the football game is hands down the block punt. Mm. That making it go from, wait, we're in a tough 7-0 type of football game to, oh crap, we're down 14-0 in an environment we haven't been in a whole lot, and especially as a young rookie quarterback.
Making him play a game, making
exactly.
Josh call a game that it kind of takes them away from what they were doing
exactly
so well.
Right. So that really put them in a tough spot. And then, of course, I know they compounded and made some mistakes after that. Hey, I mean, Wentz 5-for-12 for 57 yards throwing the football, right, through the interception.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could go back and watch plays in the second quarter and go, man, Carson Wentz trying to give him the ball back. He's trying.
Yeah.
He had 3 or 4 dropped interceptions. J.C. Jackson dropped one. Like, there's a few plays there where I go, man, we've seen the Patriots make that play all year this year. They didn't make it this game. Just wasn't their night. Colts outplayed them. And, you know, the Patriots made some mistakes that we don't usually see them make.
Before we take a look at the Pats' mistakes, let's begin with the positive for the Colts. Jonathan Taylor specifically, first quarter, I think he picks up 11 here on a 1st and 10.
Like, they ran 2 runs basically the whole night, all right? It was the same 2 runs for the most part. There might have been 1 or 2 that weren't this of what we're going to explain, all right? But here, and again, this is not my drawing, but here, either way, it's this play with, you know, the tight end going behind the line of scrimmage, right, and kicking it out. It's the inside zone with the ability to cut back, right? We've gone over that a bunch of times. It was that play, or it was, let's, you know, single here, double here, somebody gets up to the second level, right, get a him up to the level, have a double here, and have this guy get to the second level. It was basically those 2 runs the whole game. This is not a special one. Again, other than the 67-yard run, there's not a lot of runs where you went, oh, whoa, they ripped them off. There was a few 7s and 10s, but there was a lot of 1s and no-yard gains and things like that were mixed in here. Now, what I want to show here, this is the inside zone, you know, cutback play. Fake the speed sweep, all right? Everybody's going to get up here, inside zone. He's going to cut him off right there and then try to cut this guy off at the second level. And he's going to kind of press the edge. And, hey, listen, if a hole pops up through here, he'll take it. Or he can look back for some cutback lane. Okay, so now as the play develops, what I want everybody to watch is, like, 2 things that I think are awesome about Jonathan Taylor. First off, the position he's in right here. When he gets the ball, he always gets his shoulders squared to the line of scrimmage. Why is that important? You know, instead of, like, maybe being slanted that way, well, you don't have as good a vision, and if there is a cutback lane, it's hard to get there if your body is pointed that way, running that way. He does a really good job of staying square to give him the ability to go all 3 ways, and he shows great patience in pressing the hole, right? So he presses the hole, and where that's important against a team like the Patriots, where this guy's 2-gapping. His gap is either side. He's just ready to throw this guy away. You could see here, I believe this is Lawrence Guy. He's doing the same thing. He's really responsible for both gaps, all right? And where it's important that he is patient and presses the hole, he makes some of these guys commit. So they commit. And now a guy like Braden Smith has him on the inside and can lock him there to where now he can make a cut and readjust and go through the hole that way. And you can kind of see there, right? Great patience. I mean, really is. To me, this is where he's gone to another level. Maybe could have gone here, maybe. But look how he set it up.
Mm.
You know, he kind of went there, I think, knowing, wait, maybe I will go there. But because he's not like going like a bat out of hell, right? He's able to kind of slow and jump cut and slash his feet and read it as he goes, and then makes a phenomenal last cut.
Would you say that last cut, is that a sense or is that vision?
I think that's a little bit of a sense almost.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's like it's a little bit of like...
he wasn't looking there.
No, exactly. I think it's a little bit like, hey, wait, I think I'm going to go through here. And he sees this guy kind of disengaging. But because he's patient and staying square and keeping a base underneath him, he kind of starts to feel like, wait, this guy's here. This guy's falling off here. Let me just jump cut and get up into this hole. And again, this is one of the better runs of the day. That's a great cut. That really is. And it gets them, again, he could have probably gone in here, but he would have been tackled about right there too. Instead, he makes this cut and gets an extra 10, 11 yards,
O-line
putting his head
too.
Down.
O-line right
staying
side.
On
was,
blocks,
man,
no doubt about
strong
it.
Strong finish.
They're a good group and didn't even have their one, what the hell's his name? The center who had the family problem. Frank Kelly, right.
Ryan Kelly.
Sorry,
Ryan Kelly. Yeah.
My guys mixed up there. But, yeah, Ryan Kelly, who, hey, thinking about you, man, sorry about your loss.
Yeah, tough one.
Yeah, but their O-line's legit, Paul. It's
big time.
Legit.
Big time. Okay, so that was kind of, I mean, ham and egg in it, you know, finding a way, grinding it out there.
Right.
To an 11-yard run. The play, you talked about it already, the 67-yard touchdown to really ice the game. Let's take a peek at that.
Yeah, well, and again, the Patriots here are in a little bit of a we got to stop them situation, right? So they're doing a little bit of a run blitz here, I think, to stop. I think it's the blast play. They're worried about the inside going with the tight end coming behind there, and let's try to wad that up and let them go for nothing. It's 2nd and 8, right? There's 2:09 left. They're down by 3 points. You know, so they're in a chance here to where, man, you get the stop here. It's going to be 3rd down after the 2-point conversion. I mean, after the 2-minute warning. And we might get a ball back here to kick a field goal and tie the game or go down and score a touchdown. But now it's going to be one of the other two plays we talked about, right? And here it is. It's just, it's double team. Somebody worked there. He's man-to-man because of the straight nose. It's double team. Somebody worked there, right? Block, block. I mean, that's all. They're just trying to get bodies on a body. That's all they're trying to do here throughout. Now, as we play this, you're going to see the Patriots, they try to play something to stalemate it. Kind of a run blitz, what we're talking about. You know, again, I don't know what the run blitz is, what their thinking is behind it. I'm thinking they're trying to stop this little inside zone cutback, the play we kind of just saw. That's why they're collapsing this side of the field here. And then they were trying to get these guys here to collapse it as well. But a different play got called, and it kind of got played right into the Colts' hands. Because now this blitzing linebacker is going to get stuck in here in this mosh pit of 3 guys. And they're going to be able to pin basically all 3 Patriot defenders right here. And it's going to leave Dante Hightower in a big hole of space one-on-one against Jonathan Taylor. And that's just something he's not going to win there. So I hope I explained that right. Does that make sense, Paul?
Yeah,
I mean, they're trying to do this and this and shoot the gap there and get him there and collapse it there. I believe it's for that inside zone and anything of that nature.
My question, and I'm glad you kind of led it toward Hightower. Get it to this point up here where he's right at the hole. I'm watching Hightower there, middle linebacker.
Yep.
So get it up there to where...
So here's Hightower, just so everybody sees it, okay?
So he has to come across the formation, but he's eventually in position. Right now, what about McCourty?
Yeah, I know. He's settling down in his spot.
I suppose, he forced him back inside. Was that the extent of what he was supposed to do?
That's all he was supposed to do? I mean, listen, maybe they're going to tell him, shoot your gun, just go in there and dive at his feet and take him out.
That's not really what
New England does.
In a controlled way.
It's
like, I'm here, you can't go this way.
Exactly.
Someone from over there is supposed to make a play.
Exactly right. You know, and this is a tough play. It's a tough play for Dante Hightower because he's coming from here on the move. The hole is gigantic. Right? So he's in his little spot, but he's trying to get over here and break down. And just as he starts to break down, you know, Jonathan Taylor makes another unbelievable cut and makes a miss. Hightower did not need to go that aggressively. That's really the biggest thing. You know, again, he comes over too aggressively and kind of infringes on McCourty's area where you go, no, he's there. Settle down like right here. And they won't be able to go anywhere. And again, I don't know exactly, you know, what they had in mind for stopping as far as what the run was they were thinking they were going to stop here, I don't know. I do think it was maybe that inside zone play that we just saw before this. Either way, they called the right play, got bodies on bodies. Patriots are trying to create chaos and get a stop.
Right.
That's what happens. You know, now you got nine guys at the line of scrimmage, and you break that first barrier, and it's a house call.
Two different kinds of plays with the 11-yard gain we saw first, then this long touchdown run we're watching now. One thing in common, the common denominator here, kind of the hesitation and patience at the line, like you pointed out with both of them,
right.
And then a quick move to the right.
Oh.
And he wasn't – I was watching, and we're watching from the back, so we can't see his eyes. But I asked you the question the first time with the first run, do you think that's sense or vision? You said sense. He wasn't really looking right here either.
No.
He just kind of had a feel that, oh, right's where I'm going.
No doubt about it. He's coming down controlled. He knows it's a scheme where there should be a body on a body, so he doesn't need to, like, hit it like a million miles per hour. He's just going to kind of read it out and wait for his moment to see a crack in the seam. And then
I don't know if you even saw as much as he just
I agree with you. He's feeling McCourty coming down, and he's going, wait, that doesn't feel right. Let me just try to find a little crack or seam over here. I'll put my head down and so let's see what happens. I'll just hit it hard. And he hits it hard and runs right through the arm tackle of Dante Hightower.
Tough spot for him coming all the way to the right
and then having
to react left.
Yeah, no doubt. He's such a big guy, Dante Hightower. He's getting up there in age. He doesn't move quite the same way he used to. And, hey, Taylor's special. He can fly.
Yeah.
I mean, again, this is 230. He ran 4.3. And I don't care how fast you are. J.C. Jackson runs down everybody.
He almost did.
So you're fast if you have a ball in your hand and J.C. Jackson doesn't run you down. Because I can show you 8 clips through the year of J.C. Jackson hawks everybody.
It looked like he was thinking, should I go down
or what should I do here? And then he was like, oh, shit, he's graining on me.
I got to get on my horse.
Let me get on my horse a little bit here. Yeah. And then,
and
oh, I wish the clip keeps playing because J.C. Jackson, he shows emotion. Like he could, I think he was pissed. Like, I can't believe I didn't run him down, which I always respect out of a DB when they run you down.
All right, great work by the Colts offense, specifically that run game, as they have been doing most of the season. Other side, Colts defense was awfully good, too.
It was. It was really good. It really was. And, you know, I think the big thing is, and they probably took this a little bit from – the Buffalo game, you know, early. But, you know, again, I don't know if that's me clearing it or it was me. All right, so, hey, big thing is here is the point I want to make is the Colts, they didn't go – like, it put me back on the screen for a second if you guys don't mind. Like, all right, here's my gap, right? They didn't go, okay, they're running some zone scheme and my gap's, you know, here. I'm just going to continue to stay in my gap. They played more of an approach to this game, again, where I think I've used this phrase with you a little bit, of shoot your gun.
Mm-hmm.
If you see a hole, just run through it.
Yeah.
Because they're probably going to be running through it here real soon. Or don't let, you know, the play develop to where you're sitting here and now they're doubling to a guy and now somebody gets up to you and now the play's blocked perfectly. So they basically just said, you see a hole, fly through
it. We're not reacting. We're being more proactive.
We're going to be more proactive.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly right. Just let's cause a little chaos. Let's not let them develop their run-blocking scheme to where, oh, now it's Bill Belichick and McDaniels, and they blocked it perfectly again because we're lined up exactly where they thought we were lined up. So that's where they changed it up a little bit. The Buffalo Bills did this a little bit at the end of their football game when they were getting gashed. They finally started to realize it, all right? And, you know, with this scheme, like, you know, again, the guys I want you to watch, 37 here, right, and Darius Leonard – just watch their reactions. This is what we would like call a little bit of a why wham. They're going to let this defensive tackle go upfield, and then Hunter Henry is going to whack him on the side. He's thinking, oh, man, I'm unblocked. I'm going to fly up the field, and he's going to get whammed by the Y, and it's just going to be straight up the middle blocking from there. You know? Okay, so they do that, but they don't let any of this develop. You know, usually, and what they want to do as far as the Patriots – they want to wham this guy with the tight end and now have him come up and block Darius Leonard, and all of a sudden there's this big hole here and you're just one-on-one with a backer or somebody else even gets up to him. But Darius Leonard goes, wait, I've seen this play on film. Screw that. I'm not waiting here so this guy can block me. I'm going to get right down in here and cause issues from the get-go. And then conversely with that, Muhammad, who has the edge over here, and then we got 37 who's responsible for the B gap over here, he sees a hole once this goes and Brown blocks out, and he goes, I'm just going to go through it. I'm not going to sit here and wait so they can develop the play and push me out of the way down the field. So they shoot their gun, right? This is not a blitz. This is just, we're watching the play develop. We've seen it on film. We've been coached all week to now go through these holes and create the chaos with our speed, because they're a speed defense anyway.
Yeah, he was 37, was there in a hurry.
In a heartbeat. Yeah. In a heartbeat. Made a great play there. And that was one of the things you saw continually through the night, was them shooting gaps, not letting the plays develop, using their speed as their best defense against, hey, we're smaller than you, so, you know, you're going to block us. Let us use our speed, and that's where Willis and Darius Leonard were really good right there.
Very impressive run defense right there. Patriots offensively, if Mac Jones over the weekend throws his first red zone INT, which he did, I think we need to have a look at what happened there.
Yeah.
Also because he threw two interceptions in the game.
Both were bad. Both were at bad moments. I mean, this is 17-0, and they should come away with points here, at least to some degree, right? And he makes a mistake we haven't seen him make. You know, and then the second interception to start the third quarter, you know, there you were, is 17-0. Let's get some momentum. Throw an interception. Now it's 20-0. Back up in your own area. Play is simple here, all right? It's just going to be a three-step drop from Mac Jones. N'Keal Harry's going to run a slant and go. He's going to kind of stumble out of the break. And then you're going to have Hunter Henry running a crossing route, all right? And within that, all right, Mac Jones is going to take his three-step drop, and you're going to get fast flow from the backers a little bit. They're going to follow his eyes. Now, the thing that he doesn't do is he doesn't keep his eyes on Darius Leonard, right? He kind of sees Leonard go this way, but doesn't realize, like, he doesn't really need to go that way because this guy's going that way. Leonard kind of too aggressively reacts, but then corrects himself, you're going to see here, and gets underneath the interception here. So there you can kind of see it, right? You see there Darius Leonard in the middle, number 53, going really aggressive. I think that Mac Jones probably sees that and goes, okay, he's going. This is going to be open right down the middle. But you're going to watch. Leonard's going to put the brakes on and then start to float back to the middle of the field here. And he's got tremendous hands. And that's just not seeing the coverage, not maybe quite understanding the full scope of the coverage, that, like, wait, there's nothing else for Darius Leonard to go over there. He's too smart. He's going to stop and realize this. And he just follows Mac Jones' eyes back to the middle of the field and makes the big play, gets the interception. And it's just that kind of night there for the Pats.
He was a little cavalier with it, he being Jones, in the sense that his body language and his motion was kind of like he was dumping it to a fullback 2 yards beyond line of scrimmage. When he's thrown to a tight end 15 yards downfield.
Agreed. It's like he just thought he was going to be wide open. It's like he saw this initial motion and was like, oh, he's out of there.
Yeah.
This is going to be wide open. Let me just stand there and make a good normal throw down the middle. And, yeah, he obviously was fooled. You could see his reaction. He puts his hands on his head.
Yeah.
Like right away as he throws it, because he's like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe he came back to get that.
You should get to have a string on the ball once or twice a game where it's 1 inch off your hand and you just want to bring it right
back. Please,
right?
Oh, no. That's the worst feeling in the world.
Yes.
The ball leaves your hand. You see it's like going into interceptionville. You're in deep crap.
But not that we ever had that feeling.
No. I had that feeling a lot. I got to memorize that feeling. But, yeah, that was the game. You know, two bad mistakes by the offense, but had a punt blocked. Mm. You know, Colts ran the ball with enough success to put some points on the board on the offensive side of the ball. They didn't make any crucial mistakes. And, you know, I think, you know, between all those and then them slowing down the Patriots running game by having more of an aggressive shoot the gaps approach rather than we're going to stay right here in our gap and move along with it. You know, that's one thing you do to compound a team that you know is bigger and maybe more physical than you. Hey, we're the speed team. Well, let's use it to our advantage. Let's get up there, use our speed to where they can't, you know, come off a double team and get to us, or they can't organize their blocks in a hurry enough or fast enough fashion to compound our speed, and that's what they did. They created a lot of chaos with it.
Both the Colts and the Patriots involved in two of the biggest games of the weekend. Let's start with Indy and Arizona. Love that matchup. Our friends at PointsBet are going to help us build this one up. Arizona right now favored by one. You buying it?
I mean, I understand them being favored by one. I'm leaning Colts for sure in this. I am. I think it's a tough matchup with the Cardinals. I do. And
I think the Colts are a tough matchup for anybody.
They
right
are.
Now.
They're a tough matchup for anybody. There's no doubt. The Colts are one of those teams, and I know you and I discussed this before the podcast, and I know I've said this a lot over the last few weeks. Like, if you made me go one team that's a wild card team or on the outside looking in, that you go, they could be the team that surprises everybody, and it's Championship Sunday weekend, and they're in it. The Colts would be the AFC team I would pick. Like, don't be shocked if we're here a month from now and we go, man, can you believe the Colts are in the AFC Championship? I'm going to put me in the class of, no, I could believe it. Now, there's enough qualities. They're made for playoff football.
Yeah.
The team in the NFC, I would say, is the 49ers that I put in that class. Okay. That's the other team I look at. They're very similar in their the way they're built and everything. But for this matchup, they got a fast front seven. They should be able to contain Kyler to a degree. You know, their defense lends it to you're not going to be able to throw the crossing routes over the middle because we play zones where we pass all this stuff off all the time. I would think that could be an issue to a degree. You know, so yeah, I think their defense can pose some problems. Mm-hmm. And offensively, you know, we talked about the Cardinals are not real big up front to where I would think their offensive line can move these Cardinals. Or if they can't, it's going to be the Cardinals having to put too much eggs into the stop the run game basket.
Right.
And the Colts
have enough
of a pass game to beat you that way. The Cardinals are not great at the corner. So you can throw the ball out there if they put too much into the we're going to stop the run.
Yeah.
I think that's why they were playing so far off in that Lions game. They worry about that to a degree. So, yeah, I lean Colts.
Over under 48.5, I would take the under.
Ooh, 48.5. Man, these two teams.
Which brings up a question as to the $10 we bet last weekend.
Right. I don't have cash on me right now. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I don't either. Does one have to hit both in terms of like who you picked for the spread and also the over-under to get the $10? Or if you get one, like you got one last week.
Right.
You didn't get two. Do I owe you $10 or
no,
is it off?
No. Well, last week we just went against the game itself, right? And you took the Chargers and I took the Chiefs, even though eventually I took the Chargers the next day in my picks podcast.
You had yourself covered on both sides.
Yes, and I usually don't do that. But no, as far as like if you pick the team to win by the spread, or is it worse? So what are you asking?
I'm asking if to collect the money.
Oh, to collect the money.
From co-host.
Right.
Do you have to get the spread and the over-under right or just one of
the
two?
No, just one of the right. Or
just
we make a bet
two.
On which one we want to bet on, right?
Okay.
Like, do you like the over the under or do you like the spread? Which one do you want to work with there?
Let's do this. Let's raise it to 20.
All right. Double or nothing? You want to just go double or nothing? Or
raise it to 20.
Raise it to 20.
Is the straight bet.
Right.
And you have to hit both to collect. It's all or nothing.
Okay. All right.
You
got
to get the spread right. Your pick there, and also the over-under.
Okay, all right. So you're going to take the under and...
The Colts.
And I'll take the over and the Colts.
Okay.
All right?
Got it.
So there we go. So we both need the Colts to win. We'll be rooting for that.
Yeah.
I want the over. You want the under.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
27-24. Let's go.
Now I have something to look forward to Christmas Day.
Good.
Not
there
the presents
go.
Under the
I
tree.
I owe you 10, so I could be in the hole for 30 is what you're telling me.
Could.
Yeah, could.
Could maybe.
Right. Could be up 10, though.
Okay.
I'm usually have cash on me. I'm sorry I don't today. I really don't.
It's okay.
You can see right here. There's my money clip.
It's empty.
Yeah, it is empty.
I'll take your license as collateral.
Yep.
Okay, Pats, Bills, Sunday.
Yeah.
Who's your team?
This
is
no
this is
Beasley.
No spread.
I'm taking the Pats.
No Cole Beasley. Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, I mean, a team that can't run the ball, and now we're going to take away the guy that works the middle of the field and is the Julian Edelman of our offense. Like, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Let alone you couldn't stop the Patriots running the ball the first time when you knew all they were going to do is run the ball. Now they're going to be able to unveil some of the passes that went along with it.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to stop all that? You know, again, I got respect for the Bills. I want them to make the playoffs. I just think that this is one of these teams that's not it's a tough matchup for them.
Yeah.
These are like one of the four or five teams in football where I go, man, they don't want to see this team. The Patriots are built to beat the Bills.
You can just picture the game going a certain way and Josh Allen with like 54 pass attempts.
That's what I feel like's
14
happening.
14 rush attempts.
Right.
After
running
the game,
around
feels
like
he's played 19 games. Yeah.
Yes, exactly right. That's what I worry about. I do. And now you don't have to worry about the Beasley element. Who's going to fill that void there? I don't know. Dawson Knox, he drops the ball too much. You know, Emmanuel Sanders, we haven't seen him much over the last 6 weeks because, again, what I've been trying to tell people, there's a reason he's on his third team and it's year 12 of his career. So, that to me, it's going to be tough uphill sledding. The defense for the Bills is going to have to make some plays for them to upset or win or beat the Patriots.
Right. And you're just talking about that side of the matchup. I think it's easier to align yourself with the Patriots than the Bills' defense at this point.
I think so. Yeah, definitely.
Are you ready for play of the fucking day?
You know it.
I think we have two, both focusing on the same dude here, Devontae Adams. So much fun watching Devontae and Aaron Rodgers right now. Man, oh, man. very similar to watching Cup and Stafford in the sense that you know it's coming. You know that's where we're going. It still happens.
What are you
going to
do?
So play of the day here, late first quarter at Baltimore and Green Bay down 14-7, and they've got the ball inside the five.
Yeah, well, you know, first off, the thing I think we do need to note here, and again, we're going to have the motion by A.J. Dillon back into the backfield. You know, Rodgers at this point, when he sees Queen out there, number six, he knows it's man-to-man, all right? So he knows that for sure. He's got that. And here's the big thing of the day here. This is kind of amazing. And I was amazed. You know, I saw Rodgers' quote on Monday talking about, man, the level of respect the Ravens showed Devontae Adams, all the double teams, that's like a level of respect he hasn't seen. And he's right. I mean, they doubled Devontae Adams the majority of the day. I mean, true doubled.
Just didn't work.
Like, we're going to – he didn't have a big day. Mm-hmm. He didn't do anything great. He opened up some other people. That's what the big thing is here. You know, that was really the big thing. Green Bay realized it. They adjusted, and they found ways to get the other guys the ball. You know, but on a play like this, it should have worked. It should have. You got 17 here. You got a safety here. It's a true double. You could tell the safety's looking. It's like they didn't try to hide it. There's a lot of snaps in this game where you just go, whoa, they are doubling him, and they don't care that there's an extra guy doubling him. They're going to figure out how to cover everything else out. So here you go. You got this. And Adams is going to run a little fake the slant and come back out. Okay? All right. That's great. The real problem is number 17, right, who's sitting here man-to-man on Devontae Adams. Number 17, please don't take a step in or bite on anything inside because you have help. You don't need to overly aggressive do anything. But you're going to see. Adams is going to come off. He's going to do a little shimmy, and then he's going to fake like he's going in and break back out. And 17, the corner for the Ravens, takes the cheese and bites on it and leaves outside leverage for Adams to get out there in the flat. And, you know, Rodgers is going to throw a dime once he sees that. Again, watch the route. Watch the route by Devontae Adams. This is where he is special. He's got extremely special feet at the line of scrimmage. You know, gets in a position where he can go either way, takes that hard jab step in,
and there it is.
17 followed him in. Didn't need to, shouldn't have. But either way, there it is. Hey, he's young. He hasn't played a whole lot. And that's his first time experiencing the Devontae Adams experience.
It's a great route.
And it was just a great route. Mm-hmm. It really was. I mean, yeah.
And we have another example here of Adams getting doubled. And you kind of alluded to this. He didn't always get the ball, but the fact that he was doubled and demanding so much attention set others up elsewhere.
Yeah, it's, you know, again, you're going to have a little bit of a it's two receivers here. Here's Valdes-Scantling. Here's Adams, right? They're going to basically – it's 3-on-2. But two are going to go with Adams. And it's ultimately – I hope I got this right. I haven't looked at this again since this morning. You're going to have dropout to go get Adams, and Anthony Everett's going to be covering Adams. And that's ultimately going to leave 26 one-on-one downfield with Valdes-Scantling. So he's going to run a corner route. Adams is going to run an out route. And he's going to take this guy and this guy, and now it's going to leave Valdes-Scantling one-on-one down the field. And this was one of the things of the day. You know, again, here we go. You could see right here. This guy, they did a good job of disguising it this time. You didn't think it was a double, but he's going to take anything on the inside for Adams. And, of course, he's got the outside of Adams. So they are bracketing him up, all right? And you'll see Rodgers knows this at this point, that they've been doing this because they did it the first drive or first two drives of the game, and they were a little confused by it, but now he gets the big pass play to Valdes-Scantling. And here's the better clip of it, really. You could see, again, he's following him. He's on him. It leaves right here one-on-one with Valdes-Scantling. It's a good way to do the play and stop the double because, as you could see here, both guys going with Adams on the out route, and now Valdes-Scantling's got a mismatch on a slower player in Stone, 26 on him. He tries to hold him. He's not got anything he can do. Anthony Everett's down here trying to get back to help him because he knows he's in big trouble. But it doesn't matter. Rodgers actually underthrows the ball just a hair.
Yeah, he did.
He did. But, you know, that was about as bad as it got for Rodgers on that day, the MVP of football.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Had that conversation with Peter earlier today. And one of the things I came back to with Aaron being the MVP, you go back to the first game. I think they played it in Jacksonville.
Yeah, right.
Just awful against New Orleans.
Right.
They were terrible. He threw a couple of picks.
Yep.
They lost. Wasn't even close.
Nope.
Since that game, you add the Green Bay losses and the Aaron Rodgers interceptions. You don't even need all the fingers on one hand. Think about that. That was in early to mid-September. Losses, Aaron Rodgers picks together since then, four. Now, and one of those losses came when he wasn't even playing. It's like what he has done since that first game, it deserves every bit of credit people have been heaping on him and that team.
I think so, and it shows you just how important he is to the football team. Again, we can't really even say who's the second best receiver on the – who's the second guy? Who is it? I don't know. It's a new guy every week.
Could be anybody.
Right. Yeah. It can be anybody. Aaron Jones is second on the team in receiving. It's just, hey, whatever, wherever the game takes us, this guy will be the second guy. We know we're going to go to Adams. But, again, it just speaks to him. He's been on fire, like you've talked about. You know, he really has. The way he throws the ball and makes so many big plays just like that but never turns the ball over. There's never been anybody in the history of football that's been like this. Nobody.
Right.
You know, again, we can go through it. Fastest to 300 touchdowns, fastest to 400 touchdowns, fastest to 40,000 yards.
Yeah.
It's all the stats that truly, to me, measure the greatness, right, of a player, an individual player. Rodgers has, in my opinion.
Right.
Here he is with Brett Favre, tied with him with the all-time Green Bay Packers touchdown leader, right?
Yeah.
They both have 442. But Favre had 236 interceptions. Out of those 442 touchdown passes, Rodgers hasn't got to 100 interceptions yet.
Really?
He's at 93.
Wow.
Right. It's the greatest touchdown interception ratio in the history of the sport. He's going to get to break this record in like 30 games quicker than Brett Favre did.
And this season, that's amazing, which you just brought
up. It's amazing.
There. His numbers this season, his production, even by his own standards and the level he's created, it's exceeded that. Remember back this summer or late summer, early fall when he got up and talked forever about his relationship with the Packers and all the things that had happened. One of the things he said, you can go back through some of my worst seasons would be career years for others.
Yeah, he said that this offseason.
And, an obvious reaction is to be like, what a jerk.
Yeah.
What an arrogant jerk.
Right.
It's 100% true.
Right.
Some of his worst seasons would be the best season for some very good quarterbacks. So when he has one like he's having this season, when you line it up against the other season, it just makes it mean even more that he's done this year after year after year.
Agreed. It's
crazy.
Unbelievable. They drafted Jordan Love 2 years ago. Of course, they went to the NFC Championship game. And, you know, Rodgers had thrown – here was his down year that they were worried about.
Yeah.
He threw 26-4.
Yeah, wow.
We better draft somebody.
Off.
He was off that year. It was a bad year
for Rodgers. The decline is coming. Better go get somebody.
Just don't get it. You know, of course, 30-4 this year. You know, the highest quarterback rating in football once again. You know, again, the importance to their team. To me, it is Rodgers. He exemplifies MVP.
Right. Cooper Kupp has been awesome.
Awesome.
Love the story.
No doubt.
He's a strong runner-up, but to me, he's not really even that close to Rodgers when we talk about MVP.
No, and you know, I mean, right now it sounds like it's a three dog race. Jonathan Taylor and Brady. It's those guys. And after this last week, the odds swayed in Rodgers' favor for the first time in a while. But, you know, again, Rodgers is still no doubt one of the two or three best quarterbacks in the sport, and I think he is the MVP this year.
Crazy. We've hit Christmas week, and there's still three regular season games left, isn't it?
No, it's unbelievable. I know. It is weird. It's weird in the fact that I looked at the schedule and I was like, man, the last game is January 9th? Like, it just doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
But anyways, there it is.
There's a show.
That's a show. Chris Sims, Unbuttoned, presented by Under Armour. Paulie, you the man.
Happy holidays.
Yep,
enjoy
happy
your week.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to everybody out there. Enjoy the week. Have fun with your family. Come on. It doesn't get any better than this. You know, enjoy it. Don't get too fucked up, all right? Just get a little fucked up.
Jumping at 12:30 on NBC on Christmas
check
Day.
Check Paulie out. The guy has no days off like Bill Belichick. He's working Christmas Eve and Christmas Day.
Ski jumping is a great spectacle.
It'll be
a nice addition to your Christmas afternoon.
That is some crazy shit is what it is. You couldn't pay me enough money to do that.
I'm with you.
I'm not doing that. Sorry.
Neither.
You won't be seeing me do that. But please, check out the podcast tomorrow. Thursday, I got the Picks Podcast with Florio. You know, keep sending in the questions. We'll keep breaking down the ball. Peace out, everybody. Happy holidays. See ya. Paulie, you're the man.
You're the man. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.